Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hello, everyone. Today, we are joined by Tawanda. Tawanda messaged me when I shared an Instagram story sharing how I had a healthy pregnancy and birth at 300 pounds, and that it changed my life. And everything I read online had told me that my body, you know, was incapable of doing this. And I read so much negativity that really set off my pregnancy in the beginning, going, oh my gosh, I feel so alone in this. And then you messaged me and said that you wanted to share a little bit about your journey too. And I'm just so touched when people reach out, because I know that there are so many of us who are either trying to conceive or newly pregnant, right, or moms who we feel alone being plus size, and we're not really represented in the media or much online, and certainly not in pregnancy magazines. So I'd love for you to share with us, Tawanda, your story. Why don't we start with getting pregnant?
Okay.
How was your experience?
It was fun. It was a lot of practice.
I like it.
I'm trying to think. So,
were you guys actively trying for a long time?
We got pregnant very quickly. So I'll share that. I think one of the concerns that my husband and I had, it was an unspoken concern, because it's not like, you know, we're still getting comfortable with talking about, we're probably a lot more comfortable now that we've had a child and gone through all the doctor's visits, but it wasn't as comfortable in the beginning talking about my weight and, you know, just health and being plus size and things like that. But I know a concern of his was, would my body be physically capable of conceiving and having a successful, healthy pregnancy and being able to bring a healthy child into this world? And I know that that was a concern of his, probably more than mine, just because I've always been a plus size girl. So
yeah,
I'm more kind of like connected with what I know I could do.
For sharing that, because I feel like there's quite a few of us who can, you can relate to that, whether we internalize those feelings or our partners did. And it's not like right before you do that practicing, you want to be like, let's have a conversation.
I know. So I think, we had been married a little bit over a year, and, you know, and because we were older when we got married, so I was 32 when I got married, 34 when I had my daughter. I think people were like, okay, so you guys are going to have kids. You know, you're getting older. You know how that all plays on women. All that pressure. And I know for us, we kept saying like, okay, well, we've got to get healthy. Yeah. And I just remember one day we were leaving the mall and we'd run into a good family friend, actually, where he and his wife's godparents to their child. And they had just had their daughter. And he said, you know, when do you guys want to do it? And, you know, my husband alluded to the fact of, you know, well, we got to, you know, kind of get healthy. And there was just this assumption that, you know, I needed to probably drop so much weight before we could really do it and do it successfully. And something just clicked. And I was like, what are we waiting for? You know? And I was like, let's just do it. And I think shortly after, I did like a cleanse. I will say that. And I probably dropped about 30 pounds over the course of like 3 months just to like prepare my body.
Yeah.
You know, what I was trying to do was lose the weight I thought that I'd gain, because I didn't think, oh, I have to be a certain way to conceive. I just felt like if I'm capable of carrying my body in this weight, I want to drop weight so that once I have a child, I would be capable. I knew what I could withstand, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense.
I did that, and I was drinking like a gallon of water every single day just to like prepare. And then I downloaded the Ovia app, which is like a conception, you know, an app that helps you like
tracking that
monitor. And I'm just really laser focused when I decide I want to do something. And there were some women at my job, they weren't plus size, but who were older in age like me and had been trying for a couple of months, almost a year with no luck. And so I just wanted to prepare myself. I was reading like through the app, eat pineapples, eat papaya, you know, whatever they were saying. I was like, let me just incorporate that into my diet And I started taking my basal temperature every morning. I think that was what was most important for me, to kind of like lock down when I actually ovulated. That was new to me. Like I never knew when you were supposed to have sex in order to get pregnant. Like I just knew I was supposed to do it. So I guess I was educating myself on kind of like the process.
Which is wonderful. And getting more like in tune with this body that's been doing
I was.
Yeah, that's cool.
The first month. And I was on birth control, and I told my doctor, and she was like, okay, well, stop taking birth control. And this was the first, her first concern was like, you know, it can take some time after you come off of birth control for your body to regulate, for you to begin to get a period, you know, for you to understand that whole process. So I came off of birth control, and the next month I was pregnant.
Wow.
I know. So I was pregnant, and I'll say we had a chemical pregnancy, meaning that when we took the test at home, it said I was pregnant. You know, we called in to schedule the appointment, and then the week that I was supposed to go in, I got my period, and they explained. But, you know, you say sorry, but what I've learned is that it's very, very, very common in the sense that when you're so gung-ho about wanting to get pregnant, you are so in tune and know exactly the day that you're supposed to have your period that we test a lot earlier than we typically would. And so chemical pregnancies are much more common, and we just don't know because we're not looking for a pregnancy, right?
Well, but in this instance,
Yeah.
I say, I'm so quick to say I'm sorry because I've had a miscarriage. So I know the emotion of like wanting to be pregnant.
And that, and I think, so I will say we got pregnant with my daughter the month following that. And so I think, and I always say, you know, from a spiritual Christian standpoint, that God like knows what you can handle. So for me, that being able to have that fixed so quickly was very important to me, because although, you know, the idea of being pregnant was all new to me, and there were so many uncertainties, and I was like experimenting with like, you know, fruits and vegetables and basal temperatures, getting pregnant so quick, immediately, all the excitement, all the joy and all of that, you know, floods in. And I, you know, had told my parents and my best friend and my husband. So we were excited. And then when I got my period, it was a downer, but literally 3 weeks later, we were back at it again.
Well, you know?
We were 6 weeks pregnant during our 1 year anniversary. Aww. And so we went away to Rhode Island for our anniversary, just like a little road trip, but we stopped by the doctor's prior to going and had our first ultrasound to see our daughter. And that was like so exciting and reassuring that was how we conceived. So I'm a big stickler into like, when I talk to other ladies who are older in age, because people, I resonate with that a lot or can relate to that a lot. I always say like, make sure you take your basal temperature, because to me, identifying when you ovulate, it's probably like one of the most important parts of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a really good book called Taking Charge of Your Fertility. So for people who don't get pregnant immediately, like
twice.
I'll put this book in the show notes, because it can really walk you through. You'll learn more about your body and ovulation you probably ever wanted to. But there are a lot of good apps like the one that you recommended to.
Yeah.
Put in the show notes. Wow. So you got pregnant right away, which, you know, most people don't. And then
I know.
And then you went to see your doctor, and you shared with me that you had some frank conversations with your care provider.
Because I know that I just feel like whenever you're fat and there's a doctor, there's always their go-to answer is that, well, if you lose weight, then all of whatever will always be fine. Yeah. Like I always feel like being fat means that that's the reason that any ailment ever, you know, comes about. And while I believe that there's truth to the benefits of taking care of your body and losing weight, I also think that your body is made to do certain things, and it's designed that way. And that sometimes there's a mental hurdle that we put on ourselves, mental obstacles that say we can't do certain things because of what society has said that may not be truly how we were designed to do. So
absolutely.
I was just very frank, like, okay, look, I know I'm fat.
Yes.
So because I'm fat and I'm pregnant, I get that that's a thing for you. Talk to me real about this whole experience. Like, be very clear, be very honest. What is the maximum weight you're comfortable with me, you know, gaining? Like, what are your biggest concerns? Like, what, you know, that was the type of conversation. I didn't want them to feel like they had to be so PC and have so much etiquette in the room when we're talking about a life inside of me. I wanted them to be very comfortable with talking about my weight and comfortable with talking about the fact that I was a larger woman having a baby. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Tawanda, I love that so much because when I do a lot of public speaking as a childbirth educator, I share the stories of so many plus size moms through these experiences. And so often they're like, oh, I'm so grateful my care provider didn't mention my weight. And I'm like, I don't know that we should be grateful about that. I think that it's part of a conversation. It shouldn't be how you started this, saying, you know, care providers just look at you and make assumptions. Not at all. But we shouldn't be afraid to talk about weight because it, so we do have some increased risk, and we should be able to talk about them because that's how we know how to be proactive with our health and what we can do to have a healthy outcome. So I love that you just laid it all out on the table. Obviously not something everyone feels comfortable doing, but I hope people listening, you know, maybe feel encouraged to bring up, hey, let's talk about, I realize that I'm a plus size person. Let's talk about what I can do to have a healthy outcome. And then from there, it's really about listening to how your care provider responds to that. So how did they respond?
So it was interesting because the first, so we had two, you know, OBs. The first one was a midwife, and she actually went to college with my husband and knew him. And I felt so comfortable with her. She also was plus size and had a child. So I really felt like I could talk to her about it. And she was our age, you know, but she ended up leaving the practice.
Oh, no.
You know, she left maybe like the beginning of my second trimester to take on a job at a children's hospital. So like, I was so mad. I was like, what do you mean you're leaving like this kid? I had her cell phone number. Like, you know, I failed to mention that in the beginning, my progesterone levels were low, which wasn't really a shock to me because I was never, like, you know, that's another type of hormone. And I've never been a very hormonal person, if that makes any sense, like highly, you know, whatever. So I wasn't too shocked about that. So I had to take suppositories and I had some spotting in the beginning, and the spotting used to really freak me out because it reminded me of the chemical pregnancy.
I bet.
So I could like text her whenever, day or night, and she would just really reassure me like, girl, it's common. It's fine. You're going to be fine. Everybody, you know, blah, 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 blah.
so then you left and you had a
right. And I will say that the OB who took over on, actually the two OBs that I had at, because my OBGYN office, it's all about women. It's like a practice of multiple women, so sometimes you see different people. But the other two OBs that I saw most of the time for the rest of my pregnancy were both plus size, but they were older women, you know. So it's to me, it's just like gain older women weight, not necessarily like you're a plus size girl. Yeah. So they were more just to the buck. One was more just very, you know, by the book and very like black and white in terms of our appointments. And another one I met with once and loved her energy, and she got me. And so I started just seeing her the rest of the time.
Good.
You know, whenever I had my appointments to check up, I requested her. So I think it's really important in terms of having that candid conversation to, you know, be able to connect with your OB if you are meeting with someone and you don't feel like you can be honest and open with them about everything, that it's important to find someone else.
Absolutely.
Especially, you know.
This is such an intimate experience you're going to have with a care provider.
I know.
For the next few months.
You might
as well be able to talk to them frankly if they're going to be putting things and doing things in all different kinds of areas of your body.
Right.
So yeah, that's a really, really strong reminder. So how was your pregnancy?
It went fairly well. I was nervous a lot. And I think really, now that I think back to it, the chemical pregnancy really did. Yeah, I guess I was nervous because of that, but also just the weight, no pun intended, of carrying life, you know, inside of me. And as women, I feel like, you know, I know we have our husbands, our spouses, significant others who are there, but you feel the weight of the responsibility on you, absolutely. Right? So I think I always felt the pressure of being plus size and pregnant and knowing or feeling like if something went wrong, it would be my, it would lie on me. Yeah. And so because of that, I need to make sure I'm taking extra care of my body during this process. So I was really making sure I took prenatals and vitamins and, you know, I drank so much water. Like I said, like a gallon every single day. Like I got a lot of rest. I think my whole pregnancy, I gained 15 pounds total.
That's great. And then yeah. They're going to recommend that you gain between 15 and 20 pounds if you're plus size. Mm-hmm. Some people can lose weight. So you did exactly what the recommendation is because you were just being proactive with your health, which is wonderful.
Right. So my daughter was born in April. So I was pregnant during the winter months. I think I was a little nervous because I started getting heavier and waddling about, and it was like a late winter, we get snow here. So I think that was a concern, like, and I work at a university, so I walk around campus a lot, just being out and about in the snow, and, you know, I'm clumsy by nature anyway, but just that. So I probably got a little bit more just sedative in terms of sitting still towards the very, very end of my pregnancy. I think I was considered high risk. I do have asthma and allergies. So I would go to the like fetal and maternal medicine place at our hospital. I had an appointment there, a sitting appointment there, like once, I think in the beginning it was like once a month. And then towards the very end, it was almost weekly. I had to go and they just would do an ultrasound, check my asthma and check like my blood pressure and all my vitals.
Did your asthma get worse during pregnancy?
No, my asthma didn't get worse. My blood pressure was fine the whole time.
Because as plus size people, we have like a 30% chance of an exacerbation of asthmatic symptoms, just in case you've ever been wanting to know that. it's like one of those increased risks that doesn't get talked about very often.
Yeah.
And so that's great that they were...
They thought that my daughter was going to be a lot bigger than what she was. Yeah. So that was weird.
Were the ultrasounds showing that she would be bigger? Were they assuming?
My daughter has a big head. She has a big head now. She's in the 90, like the third, 93 percentile of her head. That big head. My husband has a big head and his whole family has a big head. So, you know, that's one of the main things that they measure when you get an ultrasound, their head and their belly. Yeah. And she still has a belly now, but she's got little legs and, you know, arms and she's tall. So I think because of that, they thought I was going to have a baby that was over 10 pounds. Wow. And that was a concern. Yeah. So I'd pass the, you know, you have to get the diabetes.
The glucose screening.
The test. Yeah. The glucose test. I test the first one. And then because they thought she was measuring big, they made me take the second one. And I'm like, well, I passed the first one. But they still made me do that. And I think of all the things that was part of. You're a big girl, you're about to have a big baby, and there's got to be a reason why this baby's getting bigger type thing. Do you know what I mean?
Did they make you it later twice in pregnancy?
Yes.
Okay. So
it was later.
For those who don't know, it's standard that you're tested if you have a BMI, usually over 35. You're tested in the very beginning because what they're looking for there is if you're already pre-diabetic or diabetic. And then you're tested again when everyone is tested for gestational diabetes around like that 24-week mark in between there. There's a couple weeks before and after. And so most people are tested twice, but then you're saying you were tested an additional.
So I was saying I got tested and I passed the first test. But because they thought that she was larger, they didn't want to believe what the first test said. And they made me take the 3-hour one.
Oh, okay. So you passed the first hour the second time. And then they wanted to, you know, your story is not unique. Whereas, which you passed it. So it shows, but where they look at you and they you must have.
There's got to be a reason. Yeah. What you're saying. At some point when you're pregnant, you're getting probed all the time.
Yeah.
And there's so many appointments that you just get used to having to do different things. So it didn't bother me, but that satisfied their concern.
Well, that's good.
By doing it.
It's a tightrope between being like, you know what? My gut tells me I pass this. Why are we doing this again? Or if I just take it, then they're going to be off my back about it, which is which is unfortunate. We shouldn't have to feel that way, but people of all sizes experience different things during pregnancy.
Agreed.
And you know, erring on the side of caution can sometimes put both of your minds at ease.
And I appreciated that. I will say, I always liked that more was being done than less. Do you know what I mean? Totally. So yeah, my pregnancy was pretty smooth. I didn't really have cravings. You know, I had done so much like food cleansing and detoxing before that I pretty much had kept a very like tight diet and stuff while I was pregnant. Mm-hmm. Except for I just craved cheese a lot and jalapeno peppers, which was odd. I thought I was going to have a boy, but I ended up having a girl.
Oh, is that one of the old
wives' tales? Well, spicy food meant that you're going to have like a boy. So I was like, oh, we're going to have a boy. Then we had the gender reveal party. And I was the only one wearing, we did it for Christmas, so I was the only one in green. Everyone else had red on for a girl. We had a girl. And I was like, what? But I love, you know, I'm so happy that we have a girl.
Oh, of course.
So the concern became, of all things, that my daughter was breached.
Oh, yeah.
That's hard. So she was breached.
And then how far along did you find out that she was in the breech position?
Well, remember, I was getting ultrasounds all the time. So she was always, laying. She liked to lay across my body. You know what I mean?
Lay out, relax.
Yes, across my stomach, like horizontally. Oh. So she wasn't like breached, like completely like feet down. She was just sideways. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because the positions that she was in the ultrasound is still how she likes to sleep. Oh. Like her face was down. And her butt was in the air. And that's how she still, if I go in her crib in her room right now, she sleeps like that.
So I mean, it's sweet, but I'm sorry that she did not.
I know.
You're like, girl, head down.
I know. I think that they were, you know, so in the beginning, it was just like, oh, it's normal. That's just how she is. But when it got towards the time where she was supposed to start turning and she wasn't, it was kind of like, okay, well, we'll be monitoring this. And as we got closer, the decision was made to try to do a manual aversion for me.
Yeah, so that means for anyone who doesn't know, to actually manually turn her from the outside of your body into the right position.
The most painful thing ever in my entire life. More painful than the C-section, more painful than anything to do with recovery and delivery was the manual aversion. We did it the week before we actually had her, maybe a few days, but they gave me an epidural in my back to like, you know, numb it out. And there were two doctors who came from my practice to do it. And it was really painful. I felt everything.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So I was in tears, but I was trying to endure it. And I was hooked up to, you know, all the types of machines to make sure that my daughter's very stubborn. I should have known then because a lot of times like the heart rate will, you know, drop down a little bit or something because of all of the like commotion, but she was just a soldier through the whole process, but stubborn and did not move from the manual aversion.
Like I'm in my comfy spot and I'm not getting
out of it. You're not pretty much is how she is now. We did that at the hospital.
Yeah, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that it didn't for you.
Yeah. And I had actually started going to see a chiropractor.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Who specialized in helping babies turn. Mm-hmm. So I started seeing her when they started to get concerned. So I think I might have saw her.
Webster technique. But I'll make sure the right one is in the show notes. Seeing a chiropractor, studies can show that they help the baby get into the optimal fetal position for birth. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always work, as we hear from Tawanda's story.
Yeah, yeah.
But you did everything you could do. And
You got to
feel good about that. And you just have a story.
I do. I know some women feel like, oh, wow, I didn't get the opportunity to like push out a child. I don't feel that way. That, you know, that wasn't my story. I just feel like my story was we had a C-section. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, but this is your story. And that's the thing with birth is that, you know, some people have a traumatic vaginal birth. Other people have a heroic cesarean birth. I don't think that we should have a narrative around birth and to make anyone feel bad about the birth that they had. I just find it fascinating to hear so many different first stories.
Yeah.
Hi friends, just popping in to say that I've been where you might be today. Plus size, pregnant, and discouraged by all the negative information online. It was hard to believe that I could have a healthy pregnancy, but I did. And over the past 7 years, I've supported thousands of plus-size people just like you. As a certified childbirth educator, I've poured all the knowledge I've gained into a guide that will answer your questions and support you throughout having a plus-size pregnancy. Go to plussizebirth.com and use coupon code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide. And you can also get the audiobook version that I recorded. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Now, let's get back to the show. So you had to prepare to have a cesarean birth. So that gave you time emotionally and then just the ability to prepare for this type of birth. Was there anything you looked up online or anything that you did to prepare?
I didn't. You know, I think I was just so ready to go then. I wanted to see my daughter. I was tired of waddling around.
Yeah.
A part of the C-section took the waiting game off of me. Mm-hmm. You know, a part of me is a control freak. So the idea that I knew, okay, we're going in on the 27th of April at 10 a.m. and having a child was like, I had an end date in mind versus a like, okay, this water thing is breaking.
Yeah.
Where am I going to be when this happens? I don't want to be at work. Like, you know, like, so I think at that point, when you're to that point of pregnancy, you really are just ready to meet your child and you're really ready to start motherhood.
Yeah.
So I wasn't concerned with that. I just knew that that was the answer. And I felt like I had done everything that I possibly could to try to do it a different way. And that just, it wasn't going to work. So I was ready, you know.
And you did it all. And this was, this was her birth story.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the cesarean like? We've had so many requests for people to share their cesarean birth story on the podcast. So anything you want to share?
So she was born at 10:45 a.m. And I was scheduled to be there, I think by 8, like it's supposed to start at 10. So you're supposed to be there 2 hours early. I think you weren't allowed to eat and maybe even drink anything. Like, I'm not sure if I was allowed to have water. I don't think I was allowed to drink anything either. We got there and you go to kind of like a pre-op room and, you know, they undress you. They take all your vitals, all that type of stuff. We were just kind of like waiting around. Our family was gathering, you know, in the waiting area of the hospital. And I walked, you know, when it was time, I walked to the operating room. And just got up on the table and they were just saying, like, you know, my name and that we were doing a C-section and all that type of stuff. I will say, I think one of the reasons perhaps the manual version didn't work is because I did have to get 2 epidurals during my C-section. So the first one did not numb me out completely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I had to get a second. After the first one, I could feel when they were like pinching, they kind of do tests to make sure that you don't feel anything before they cut. And I could feel them. And they were like, well, some feeling is natural, but I could distinctly feel when they were like pinching versus
You're like, this poking is not natural. I don't want to feel this.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, you pinched me on my right side and now you're poking me on my right. Like, this is too much.
Yeah.
They were like, she's being too descriptive. We need to do another one. Well, so we had to do another epidural. And that one completely like knocked me all the way out where I couldn't even adjust myself to like sit back properly because I completely lost all feeling from the waist down.
But you were still awake.
So it was time to go.
They didn't.
You are awake. Yeah, you're awake during the process. So don't allow whoever is your plus one, I guess, into the room until they've given you the epidural, your position, and they have like the curtain and then dressing up. And then once they have all that, then they're allowed to come into the room.
But I think it's really important what you shared. Like you said, I can feel this and you were very descriptive. So don't just be kind.
Oh yeah.
Don't just
be an advocate.
Yes, always be an advocate. Yes.
You have to. Yes. And I think that's what's the most important thing about the full, I think about being, first of all, I think being an advocate for your life is important, right?
Yes,
but
absolutely.
I think really when you're coming from like a place where there could be so much, you know, misunderstanding or stereotypes or lack of communication, like you really have to be an advocate for yourself. You know, I could have just laid on the table and heaven forbid felt a lot of that caused my body, you know, whatever. But I was like, no, like I feel this. it doesn't feel this, it should, like, I should feel this amount already. And so we stopped it until, yeah, the next time I couldn't feel anything. So, and it goes, and it's ready to go. I had two doctors there. So there was like a team to cut me open, like a lead doctor and a second one. They were both from my OBGYN practice. So I knew both of them.
Oh, that feels so good. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to share a little bit just from the childbirth educator standpoint. For anyone who's listening who has like a larger belly, a pendulum belly, often what they need to do is they need to move your belly up and out of the way to do the cesarean for you to be able to, you know, birth your child that way. And that can seem really embarrassing or scary. And so often people aren't told what's going to happen. And there are different ways that they do it. Sometimes they will tape your belly up. Otherwise, there's some new kind of contraptions that kind of lift it up and kind of stick. It's almost like a big sheet of tape thing. And I'll put some links in the show notes. But I just want to prepare you that this is just part of your journey to meeting your child. And there's nothing that you should ever feel ashamed about. So I just wanted to share that little tidbit there.
You know what's so interesting that you said that? I thought that they were going to do that, but they went on the top of my belly.
Oh, wow.
So they did not lift. I wish I could show you my C-section, but I know what you mean about having a larger, you know, a stomach area, a fupa, whatever you want to call it, and going underneath of it. But they were on, they did on top of my stomach.
Wow. Interesting.
Which I thought was crazy.
Yeah.
One of my biggest concerns, and I guess in this instance, I didn't advocate, was if it's, you know, underneath and I'm healing and there, you know, it would be harder to clean and all that type of stuff. But mine is completely over top.
Over top.
Yeah.
Well, we're all built.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah.
I'm glad I brought it up and I'm glad you brought it up. We're all built differently. And I think that this is a really great thing that came up, because if you know that you're going to have a cesarean birth in advance, then talk to your OBGYN. How would the incision be performed? And just so you're prepared for whatever outcome it is. And yes, if you do have that pendulum belly and you have the incision below, you very much so have to keep it, because it's just an area that can be moist. So you have to keep it dry. And tips around that are like having a menstrual pad that you, you know, put under your underwear so that's facing up. But a hair dryer, after you get out of a shower, putting a hair dryer on cool and lifting your belly and drying that area. So those are just some tips for anyone preparing for a cesarean. And I have a whole resource full of cesarean birth tips and tricks for before, during, and after that I'll also include. But for you, they went...
That was crazy, right? Yeah.
Wow. So and then you got to meet your daughter.
I got to. I had a little anxiety on the operating table. And that was just because I didn't realize when you get an epidural, you really don't feel anything.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't feel my feet. And it freaked me out that I couldn't feel. I just was like, oh my God, I'm paralyzed. I'm never going to be able to do anything again. And so it freaked me out and they had to calm me down. But they were just patient and waited for me to be okay. And then literally, I mean, it was a matter of minutes from when they started to when Maya was coming out.
Aww.
It was really, really, really quickly.
And your husband was right there by your head?
He was right there by my head. He left me as soon as she came out. I was like, hey! Of course, he was with her.
Yeah.
In the same room as where they cleaned her off and, you know, took all of her immediate vitals and that type of stuff.
He
and
was then they to be a daddy. That's
he
awesome.
Was. He was. And then they brought her back so I could hold her.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So then they got me all stitched up,
and
stapled
now, did he
up, and all
with
that type
her
of stuff.
For that, or did he stay with you?
That was in the same room.
Oh, wow! So you
it
guys
all took place in the same room. So we were together. Yeah, the whole time.
And that's a good
as
question.
I was being sewn up and stapled up, I could, like, my head was turned to my left and I could see them doing whatever they were doing with her and him being right there. Like, we were all talking to each other.
That's wonderful.
And then when they were all done, she was in the same room the whole time.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then they brought her back over to me and I just held her for the rest of the time and he was just by me.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I bet that helped with all those love hormones, the oxytocin.
I know.
You were with her.
Yes, yes, yes,
the
yes,
whole time.
Yes.
Oh, that's a great question for people to ask. Like, will I be separated or can I see my baby the whole time? But And then they brought you to recovery, and then they do those awful massages. I don't know why they call it a massage, to kind of help your shrink, and that can be pretty painful.
And they took me back to, or wheeled me back to, actually it was the room where I started off in. And you stay there until you have feeling in your feet and stuff again.
Which you did correct, for the record.
Which I did get back. I'm alive. I'm walking. I'm running. Yeah. My mom actually was in the room with me, and she like squeezed my foot, or like ran her finger along the bottom of my foot out of excitement to say, like, you're a mommy now. Aww. And I felt it. And I was like, I felt that, you know, and that made me feel better. And shortly after, everything, it's just like a slow, it slowly like comes back with time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's got to wear off.
It has to wear off. And then after that, we went, they wheeled me to the room that we would be in for, you know, the duration of our stay. And you have to be able to lift your butt and your body up and off of the operating, you know, table one to your bed. And I think that that's hard in the beginning, because you're still getting some of your feeling back, but then you're also, you know, have a big kind of open wound area. So you feel that pain. But you just kind of take your time to get from one table to the next.
How many days were you in the hospital?
So we stayed the 4 days, but really we were just being like, it felt like we were in a hotel, and we enjoyed our family coming to visit us. You know, it was covered by insurance, so we're kind of like, well, this is our last time to like have any type of help as new parents, because we were both new parents with any of this. So we'll just stay the extra night, and then, you know, prepare that shift to be taking the baby home and stuff like that. So we stayed the 4 days. We didn't necessarily need to, but we just enjoyed the staff there. We had a really good experience at the hospital overall.
Oh, I'm so glad it was possible. And then maybe just share a few little things about recovery for anyone who...
I will say I started walking immediately, and that was a shock to everyone on the floor. They were like, oh, you need to become an advocate for C-sections, because I think moms are scared to get up right away. But for me, like, I knew that there was a bigger task ahead of like being a mom. And that the sooner that I handled the recovery, the sooner I could get to hold her and, you know, do a lot of that. So I immediately, within like hours of my surgery, started walking the floor slowly. Go ahead.
They say that that's really important. Like, the sooner you can move, even though, it's scary, the better for your overall recovery. That was great.
And it was tender pain, right? Like, it was, my pain was more tender to the touch. Like, if something touched my stomach where it was, that's when it hurt the most. But I probably was drugged up on a lot of stuff too. So I won't take that away from it. But so, so just getting up and feeling the tenderness, you know what I mean, is what hurt the most. But I would just hold my stomach and walk around slowly. And I did that, I think, twice the first night. And then I would go every few hours. And by the, like, end of the second day, I'd, like, gotten in the shower and all that type of stuff. But when you have a C-section, they have to put the catheter or whatever. I guess they have to do that for everyone. But, you know, there's that time frame that you're waiting out to where you can actually pee on your own again. And that was like a thing. I was like, I've been drinking all this water. I haven't gone to the bathroom yet. When am I going to get the desire to do that? But that came with time. I did get really bad migraines for a while because of the epidural. And so most of my pain was more the head pain that I felt. Like, it felt like my head was banging. But in terms of my physical body withstanding the C-section and recovering from that, that was not that bad at all. It was not that bad at all.
That's wonderful.
You know, of course, my husband had to get up and bring, you know, my daughter to me when she was crying and stuff like that a lot in the beginning, because we wanted to, you know, get her immediately. But after a few days, you know, I could slowly get up in bed and get her and bring her to me. And I use our boppy pillow kind of like around my stomach to lean on to support because that's just where the tenderness was. But other than that, it was pretty easy.
Yeah, boppies are wonderful, not just for breastfeeding, but for recovery. And I still use mine as a laptop lap pillow. I do it every single night. You'll find me on the couch with a boppy, and my son
is genius.
But no, I mean, I think that's a great tip that you kept it there around your belly because it helped you feel more.
It was secure. It helped, and I could put her there, but also it was a guard, you know, for me to stop from being bumped up against it. So
And I will say that the older boppies were not size friendly for the most part, but the newer models of boppies,
the last
10 or little less years, has they're size friendly. So in case anyone was wondering, well, so bed. It sounds like bed is kind of where you spent a lot of your recovery at home.
Yep, and we have a bed that moves up and down. That was helpful too. To adjust it to kind of, so the first, I think that also, you know, I did use it, my feet to go up when we were trying to conceive too. That was another thing after we had sex, I would leave my feet in the air. But so I would just, everyone came to me, you know, I was upstairs in our bedroom. I really probably floated just in this area, our bedroom, our bathroom, you know, the second floor of our house for probably like a week. Like I really wasn't going down the steps.
That's smart though.
I probably, if I needed to, I could have, but I just didn't, you know, unless we were going out, you know, you have to take the baby to the doctors for their first checkup after the first few days of being home. But I just, you know, I walked around here and stayed up this way. I was also a zombie and exhausted and all that stuff too.
Which happens regardless of how you give birth. But you're recovering from major surgery. But it sounds like the tips there were that you felt emotionally supported throughout this whole experience, and your cesarean was not a traumatic. You were prepared for it. And that was just, you know, your little one was not going to go head down. So you knew what you were coming into. And then you were vocal about, hey, I need to make sure I'm not feeling anything. And then you were just well taken care of, and you got up and walked early. And then you had your wonderful husband to bring you your baby or water or whatever you needed. And
I think that's what preparing your husband or preparing your significant other for a C-section, I think, is most important, because in some ways he was mommy and daddy in terms of being the first, you know, on command for the first few days, which are like the days where it's really the roughest, because I physically couldn't, you know, get up and get to her.
Yeah.
So he was taking care of our baby, but also me, you know, so preparing, I think, the husbands for that part of it, it's important too.
That's really smart. I've never actually heard that, but prepare your partner for the cesarean just as much as you need to prepare yourself. Any other words of wisdom for anyone who's going to have a cesarean birth?
Not to be afraid of it.
Yeah.
You know, that there's not anything really to be afraid of. And then also to honestly just realize that you're a superwoman, you know, and I mean, in the sense of the recovery, like, don't be afraid to get up. Don't be afraid to move around. Don't be afraid to put some demands on your body to see how much it can withstand so that you can recover sooner than later.
Yeah. And I piggyback to say that you are a superwoman for giving birth via major surgery. I feel like so many people have this negative stigma around it, but I feel like every person who gives birth is a champion, regardless of how your baby is born, and that we just need to celebrate one another and support one another. And journey to motherhood is exhausting and hard and difficult, wonderful, no matter what. And I don't think that ever changes. I think
no.
40, it's still exhausting.
Once a year, I know.
It never ends. Well, thank you, Tawana, for sharing your journey with us, and enjoy your beautiful family.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Today's episode is from the Pump and Dump Show, the original Mom's Night Out. Created by lifelong friends Tracy T and Shana Firm, the Pump and Dump Show celebrates awesome moms everywhere by delivering a night of laughter, commiseration, and validation. Currently on tour, the Pump and Dump Show is making more than 20 stops, including San Jose, Orlando, Atlanta,
DC, Dallas, and more. So book your babysitter, grab your fellow breeders, and get ready for an unforgettable laugh out loud, pee your pants a little, mom's night out. Visit the Pump and Dump Show online for ticket and tour information.